Creation is everything you do. Make something.
Hello, loves. Welcome to this month's episode of Our Naked Truths, The Communion. Wherever you are, we invite you to join us. Perhaps pour yourself some tea. We're currently drinking our special ONT blend created to enhance relaxation, meditation, and self-love by our trusted and loved sponsor, Mutulu Botanica. Check out their offerings on their website at www.mutulubotanica.com. Okay, let's go.
I vow to exist without fear, shame, or guilt. Daring to love myself with nothing to prove. You're listening to Our Naked Truths, The Communion. Sharing our stories of self-love and acceptance. So, be still, be present, and let's begin. So, loves, very, very excited today to bring you the incredible visionary, multidisciplinary, and just a sister, really. Dilemma, artist, poet, performer, actress, playwright, is in the building with us today. And she's going to be sharing her story of self-acceptance and her journey post her Our Naked Truths experience.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey.
Welcome.
I feel welcomed.
You are welcome, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
Always, Joss. Always there for you. Always.
Oh, my heart runneth. We're going to kind of jump straight into this because there's actually so much that we can talk about with you because you do so much. And I feel like, again, with most artists, that a lot of their self-acceptance and self-love journey informs their artistic practice. But I think we get to see a lot from you, but also not, because you're kind of an extrovert introvert and you keep a lot to yourself. But you've been so radical and powerful in how you own your journey.
Thank you for
and
saying
so
that.
I'm going to ask first, before we go into other bits, you modelled for ONT, what, 2 years ago now?
Yes.
Do you remember that experience?
Yes, I remember that experience like it was yesterday.
So do you want to share with our listeners kind of how was your ONT experience and what came up for you post-session?
I have to start from the beginning if I'm going to talk about it. And it was first going to ONT by mistake. That was the first thing. I went to ONT by mistake, you know, and I just caught the therapy session of another person's session. I went with designer and extraordinaire Sandra Bode. She took me to ONT the first time to go and drop something for you, I think. And then I just heard just say, love is acceptance. You know, she said, love is acceptance. And I was sitting there like, love is acceptance? Love is acceptance. Love is acceptance. You know, I was sitting there like, echoing through. I was like, is that true? Is love acceptance? Then the second question I asked myself, and I think you asked it as well, was, do you accept yourself? You know, I was like, do I love myself? Do I accept myself? And that was the question I asked in my head on that day. And I didn't really, you know, say that to you or say that to anyone. But in my head, I just kept on saying, you know what? I don't accept myself. I don't accept so many things. I could list how many things at that time I didn't accept with myself. And the most unaccepting thing that I had at the moment was my body hair. Body hair was the thing that was so pressing. Can you imagine? And now I'm looking back. Now I'm looking back, I'm like, you know, growth is so amazing because you look back and you're just like, why was that even a problem? But at that time, it was such a massive problem, my body hair. And so I remember everyone like casting out like what, you know, in the therapy session, talking about what they felt. And then you pointed at me and I said, you know what, yeah? I feel like the sexiest thing on earth when I have no body hair on. That's the first thing I said. I said I could walk around, I could do whatever without no body hair. But if I had body hair, like, I would feel like Bigfoot. And then you listened, and then we spoke, da 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 da. And then at the end, you came up to me, you said, you're going to model for me. And I said, yeah, sure. Sure, model, sure. And I was thinking, no. And then I left, and it just haunted me. the fact that this beautiful goddess of a woman was saying to me, you're going to model for me. And I was there saying, no. This time, she said, off your pants. I would be off in pants. But then, at that time, because I knew, not only that she was telling me to do something that was like, you know, fearful, you know, something that was like, you're modeling nude in front of people and it's supposed to be liberating and then you're going to talk about your life. It was too much. And at that moment, I just did not see myself doing it. But it haunted me. I thought about it and I thought about it and I thought about it. And I said, you know what? Yeah, I do have a problem with body hair and I do want it to go. And at this point, it's so excessive how I feel about my body hair that I just want something. The night before, weeks before, I'd been looking up how to get rid of laser. You know, I was thinking, how expensive would it be? I was at that stage. And so I eventually said yes, that I'm going to do it. And then what I did is that I grew out my body hair, you know, for like the next like 3-4 months. I grew it out, like my facial hair, my body, you know, everything just hairy. As much as I thought I was hairy at that point. Yeah. And then, you know, I came to model. And then nobody said anything about this hair. No one even noticed. It was crazy. No one noticed. And in fact, they painted the picture and I thought what they would paint was like, they would, you know, like when like you draw, see the line and they draw the... I thought they'd draw the hairs on my body, but nobody even, there was not even one person who drew a hair. And I was just like, you know what, yeah? You know what? You were crazy for a minute, girl. But this just healed you. It's all right. It's all right. And that was my experience of going to Our Naked Truth. And, you know, that was my personal experience, you know, of actually being healed from something, from actually doing it.
Wow.
The other thing was when I first spoke in my therapy session, that's when I realized that I was a liar and I needed help in that sense as well. Because I spoke as if to say I knew what self-love was. And in that situation, I erupted my own existence because I was like, you lying.
And this happened post your ONT experience. So you started therapy after Our Naked Truth.
Yes, like I started after Our Naked Truth because I felt like, you know, that moment where you had to talk about your self-love and you had to, you know, share your therapeutic experience and share your life experience. In that moment, I realized that I was lying to myself about the state of mind that I was in, you know. And then from that, I was like, you know, I went to my friends and I was like, you know what, guys, I need help. And I'm going to try and dig deep into my existence. And it's going to be really dark. So I need you guys to catch me. I need you guys to hold me or pull me out because I've never gone there before. My dad passed. I got into a relationship literally like within the year of him passing. How do you expect me to be a normal person in that situation? It was impossible. And that was when I found out that I was queer. So I was in a queer relationship to find out I was queer. And then it was like a spiral. So I was really in a place where I did not know who I was. And Our Naked Truth for me was like the genesis. It was like the push that I needed to start. So this is why whenever I'm speaking in interviews, I literally reference you. I reference that because obviously it's an opportunity that I took. But at the same time, if it didn't exist, would I have taken it? You know, would there be anything for me to, you know, kickstart my self-love journey?
Wow. Like, thank you so much for that powerful testimony and also bravery in sharing so much. I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions that you go to Our Naked Truths, you model nude for the first time and it's going to be so transformative and right then and there you're going to be healed and your life is going to change. But actually, you've hit the nail on the head. It's the beginning of a process. That's what it is. That's where the transformation begins. Yeah. It's about being able to, A, stand there, be naked, vulnerable with not only your story and your body, and then the real work starts after that. And it's what you do around that. And you did amazing steps, like going to therapy. It's amazing. And then the revelations of discovering, oh, actually, I've been lying to myself. I thought I knew what self-love was. I thought it was just around the aesthetics and around my body hair. And once I've been able to combat that, I'll be able to accept
everything about myself, but actually that was just the catalyst to be being able to dig deeper and look into other aspects of yourself that maybe you were hiding, maybe you were ashamed of.
You don't accept the past that you don't accept.
Yeah.
So even I took responsibility for a failed relationship, but that was also to do with my innate guilt. That was also to do with my lack of self-love. And what I did after the relationship was, I'm the most horrible. I'm the one who did this. And that was, again, something that was already there. So how do you accept situations that happen to you? How do you accept other people when they do something really random that's not, you know, in line or in check? Mm-hmm. you have to be able to accept yourself, to accept all of those other things.
Absolutely.
Having to do so much work to realise that actually I'm not actually horrible, but things did happen to me and and they're valid and I need to address them.
Get your healing.
Right.
Basically.
It is my hope for myself and for my people to be free in future. I wish this so deeply so that I make speech, art and music about my very mundane and undervalued existence as a black woman. With hopes that when we are free again, when I am free again, whenever that is, that I will have countless artworks, texts, and stories that reflect our nuanced, complex lived experience in this century. It will be party to the type of resources they will need and use to help piece together the most compelling story of revolution and resilience the earth has ever seen. In the same way, past artworks are used for reference today, my art should help piece together pieces of information about our people. It will show evidence of a people who were systematically, physically, and mentally oppressed under a system that had kept them in a specific position for hundreds of years, solely on the basis of class, colour, more specifically shade of skin, and their gender. I know it deep in my gut that it won't just be about history by that time, but it will finally be about our story. I feel it deep in my womb, where I have been chosen to feel many things, that although circumstances and environment have been set up to keep me from creating freely, I must create anyway. I may never see it, but I know freedom is coming. I can smell it. I therefore create as though it were already so, as though I were already free. So shall it be.
Wow. So you didn't just give us a love note, you actually gave us art. Thank you so much for your poetry. Thank you so much for your words and sounds. We hear them, we receive them. In terms of what I received from that, it felt like you were saying that your art was not only representing your own experience, but it was representing the experience of black people. And you wanted to ensure that it enabled and empowered them to reclaim their narratives and to share knowledge and information that transcends generations, which is incredible. What a legacy that you're about to leave. One question I would say is, because of your unique experiences, would you say that your art specifically just speaks to all black people?
With regards to the actual work that I create, especially the work I'm doing right now with my art, it's very specific to the Igbo offspring, like as in, you know, the children of Igbo people. So I'm really focusing, the project I'm doing right now is Children of the Half Yellow Sun. And basically, we know the Civil War happened and PTSD from that war, from our parents, has not been dealt with. Yet, here are the offspring of this experience. And I've been finding a way to connect all of us. And what I'm doing is, you know, I'm painting portraits of Igbo women in front of the Biafran colours. It's not necessarily the Biafran flag because Biafra never happened. Mm-hmm. But using those colours and what they meant and creating art pieces out of their faces and their portraits. That's literally the journey I'm on, because I feel like, going back to what we spoke about earlier about how to be truthful with your art, and this is so personal to my self-acceptance, so personal to my journey as an Igbo girl myself, as the first daughter. So all Igbo first daughters are called Ada. So if I'm ever looking for another one of us, all I need to do is to call out for Adas, you know? And they are our ancestors, the people who came before us, they gave us those tools so we can find each other. And we're not being able to use that. And I'm trying to use that because, you know, in the diaspora especially, it feels like we are lost or we are losing ourselves even further. And so I'm trying to kind of like bring us back. So I'm not trying to represent all black people, but as of now, right now, I'm trying to represent myself and people that fall in line with that. And I know that if it's the truth, everybody will come, whether they're white, black, green, absolutely, yellow, you know, absolutely, it's the truth.
I'm so gassed. I cannot wait. First, I can't wait to see this collection of artwork build. I also can't wait for you to do the call out because it'll be so interesting to see who responds. Because I guess also what's interesting is when you are raised in a diaspora and coming from quite a complex West African history and being raised in the diaspora, you'll be taught your African values and traditions, but then you're also having to navigate Western spaces and the duality of those experiences. And some people either forget those their cultural narratives, mm-hmm, and others and use that to just assimilate the Western world, mm-hmm, and others are looking for home, mm-hmm, and I think in that, as a Ghanaian woman, I hear Sankofa, mm-hmm, I hear people being able to return and take what's theirs and, mm-hmm, collect their things, mm-hmm, and so I'm really excited about seeing who stands up and is willing to be counted in this. And thank you so much, mm, for being able to be the architect of this next renaissance that we're going to see with Igbo women this year, because I'm going to basically put it on you to be that person. Yeah. Thank you so much, Dilemma.
Thank you.
We're now going to enter another segment, and this is our ONT self-care question segment, where we invite you, the listener, to submit questions for myself and our guests around self-care. And so this episode's question has come from Nikki, and it's, how do you build relationships that are not transactional? Dilemma, would you like to start?
I think that's a good question. Mm. How do you build relationships that are not transactional? I think, first of all, you might have to treat the word transaction as consent. Mm. And the reason why I'm saying that is because, like, if I consent to giving somebody my love, mm, and they consent to giving me their love, mm, then there shouldn't really be a question of transaction. It's just about, how do you love me? How do I want to be loved? Mm. And so the question is, how do I want to be loved? If I'm constantly doing this thing, for example, if I'm constantly cleaning the house and my partner does not clean the house ever, am I doing that because I want my partner to do it? Or am I doing it because genuinely I love my partner and they should live in a clean house and I love myself? Mm. So the issue of transaction is that no one really wants to talk about that, the fact that transaction is actually bad mind. My question is, why are you doing it? You know, are you doing it because you're trying to show me love? Mm. If you're doing it because you're trying to show me love, do I not show you love? Mm. You know, and your ways of receiving love is different. Is it consensual? That's the thing. Do I consent to giving this person money? Do I consent to cleaning this house? Do I consent to cooking? And then, you know, if I did consent to it, then it's a you problem. You know, like, that transaction is a you problem. You know, I feel like if you think of it that way, arguments with transaction will subside, because it's like, are you doing it because you love me, or are you doing it because you want me to do it back? Mm. And I always do things because I love the person and I love myself. And really and truly, I really don't think about do it back to me. I really don't think like that, because I love the person, though.
Yeah.
If I didn't, I would literally be like, you know, I've done this, you know, I've done this. I'm not receiving love from you. I need you to at least take out the bin, at least, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm, and that comes from a place of frustration. It comes from a place of not feeling loved, mm-hmm, by the person that you're with.
Thank you for that. I find this question quite interesting for a couple of reasons. Because I think any loving relationship, there is a form of transaction, but I think it's about what your intentions are and what the concept of transaction actually means to you. So if we think about altruism, with altruism, it's being able to give from a pure place and not expect anything back. You're just giving for the sake of giving and from a loving place. But even in the act of doing something good, you feel good, which means you receive a gift from that experience or from that exchange. So there is a transaction that happens. It just may not be exactly what you gave. You may give someone £1 million and you feel good that you've given that person £1 million because you know they're going to go away and do great things. And the transactional benefit for you is that you just feel good. It's not the same as getting £1 million back, but there is still a transaction in place. So I think it's around the intention, which is really important. Because if you are in a relationship where, right, I've bought you Dr. Martens for your birthday, I'm expecting Dr. Martens on my birthday. And when you don't get me Dr. Martens on my birthday, that means, what does your love mean? You don't love me. You don't respect me. This, what is this? I'm being used and abused, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's about that intention and that understanding and being able to, before you offer something to somebody, ask yourself, am I giving from a place of love?
Yeah.
Or am I giving from a place of expectance?
Yeah.
Am I expecting something? And if I am expecting something, is it just? Has that person consented to it?
Yes.
Are they even aware?
Are they even aware you're sacrificing yourself?
Are they even aware that they're expecting something? And then also maybe think about that when it comes to boundaries as well, because that's another thing of being in relationships where people feel abused, used.
Mm-hmm.
And exploited.
Yeah.
And those relationships usually are feeling maybe quite transactional, but in the negative aspect of transactional,
of course,
where someone is giving, giving, giving and realizing I'm getting absolutely nothing back. But if you were never getting anything back from that person in the beginning and you still decided to give, why were you giving? Were you giving just because you chose, you were doing this from a place of love? Or were you giving because you did expect to get something back?
Yeah.
And what does that mean? I find this really interesting because I've experienced this myself, but that's kind of what informs a lot of martyrdom. You may not even be aware of your own boundaries. You may not even be aware of your own criteria of what love means to you.
Right.
And so therefore you're constantly pouring, because actually there's aspects of you that you don't really love yourself enough to understand what your criteria is. And so you're giving and getting nothing back. And so you start becoming resentful.
Yes.
And you're not pouring. You're pouring consistently out of an empty cup for others, but leaving nothing for yourself. So you're not feeling nourished. You're feeling dehydrated.
Yeah.
Your pores are open.
Yeah.
Your pores are open. You're dehydrated and everybody else is looking matte and glowy and dewy because they've been sipping from your cup.
Right.
But you didn't know that actually I need to make sure there's a baseline of at least 500 milliliters in this chalice. That's for me.
Right.
And that's what my love is. Oh, that was such a good question. Thank you so much, Nikki, for submitting that, our first question. We'd like to open that up to you, listeners. So please submit your questions to Our Naked Truths podcast. So Our Naked Truths with an S, podcast, all one word, @gmail.com. We are going live every month. We'd like to hear from you. We'd also like to hear your responses to some of our answers to the questions too. Oh, so this leads us quite nicely onto my next question then. We know that you thought that by modelling nude with body hair, you'd be completely accepting of self, but realised that actually was just unlocking all this other stuff that you hadn't really dealt with or accepted about yourself. So now you're at this stage in your journey. When do you feel the most accepting of yourself?
I feel the most accepting of myself when I'm surrounded by people who know me, know the real me, and, you know, they're my closest friends, I feel, are my mirrors and they're a reflection of me. So I feel really, and it wasn't always so, which is why I call them now, you know, the place that I feel most loving of myself, because before, the reflections of myself were not so good. So I had lost friends and I needed to lose them. But the people surrounding me now, I feel like they make me feel the most self-love because I know that they're like me, you know, and they're reflections of me. So it just makes me feel settled. It makes me feel like, you know what? Look how you're loving yourself. Look at these people, you know. So it puts me in a really good place. That's what I would say.
Beautiful. That's so beautiful. So the power of community.
Yes.
You know, and it's so interesting in the personal recovery model, having community and having love around you that is accepting of who you are is actually really integral for a personal recovery journey for someone that has a mental health recovery. But that kind of feeds into a self-love journey, because when you're in your own acceptance journey, there is a shedding process that happens. There's a reckoning, there's a rumble, there's revelations, and you need to know you need to feel held by your community. And it's actually really important. A lot of the work that we do in our self-love journey and acceptance journey, yes, it's going to be work that we do for ourselves, but it does need to be reflected in the people that we're around. Mm-hmm. And community is integral. Mm-hmm. And it's so good to know that you feel nourished and beautiful mm-hmm. and loving of self when you're able to see yourself reflected in your community. That's amazing.
Yes.
Thank you. And so you pour into yourself quite a lot through your art. Mm. You know, you are a poet, you are a singer, you are an artist, a painter, mm-hmm. a playwright, mm. a performer, mm. A band manager. Mm. You do all the things, all the things. What I'm interested in, and I think what would be quite interesting for our listeners to hear, is how does your self-acceptance journey inform your artistic expression? And what does that process look like?
I feel like self-acceptance really, really has to inform your art or what you're doing. Yeah. You know, like your self-acceptance journey has to inform your art. It just has to, because, you know, like, that means if it doesn't, it means, is your art really for yourself? Is your art really, who is it for? You know, and so I feel like what is artistic or what is creative, you know, is pure honesty mm-hmm. and it's truth. And I feel like it's difficult to be an artist because it's difficult to be truthful. Mm. It's very hard. And when you are truthful, the more truthful you are about yourself, the more artistic and the more creative you are. And actually, the more enigmatic and the more attractive you are, you know?
Absolutely.
So I feel like art, like it has to coincide for me. And it has, you know, the more I've gone into my self-love journey, the more I've been able to stand firmly in my art, because within the last years when everybody knew I could paint, mm-hmm. you know, it's because of that self-love journey. It's because I'm going, do you know what? This is me. You know, I can't really pretend. And do you know what? I'm accepting of me. So I'm accepting that sometimes I want to speak and it comes out in poetry. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I want to make emphasis and it comes out in singing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I want to put out what's in my head on the canvas and it comes out in painting. Mm-hmm. I'm just doing the things that are healing me, mm-hmm. but like putting it out for other people, mm-hmm. if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like what you're seeing from my artwork is my healing journey, if anything.
Mm-hmm. And as we know, like creativity is the birthplace for so much of our lives. It's not just about acceptance. It's the birthplace of ideas. It's the birthplace of being able to challenge yourself. It's the birthplace of being able to take ownership. And it's the birthplace of acceptance and of love. And be able to understand what your creative tools are and harness them and use them as a form of expression for not only you to heal, but for also for us to enjoy and also for us to heal from it is very powerful. We're very grateful for you. And so our next question is a little different, but it's still kind of it's kind of on theme. So in terms of like your identity, and again, you're multifaceted like we all are, there's lots of intersections there. What did the impact of being queer, Black and African have on your self-acceptance journey?
It really has a lot to do with my self-acceptance journey, because I feel like at the end of the day, I really feel like Black people, queer people, African people, we go through a level of oppression that, you know, in everything that I mention, there is something to overcome. And so it's like that really affected my self-acceptance journey, you know, for a long time in the way that it hindered it, you know. And so I had to literally, the only way I feel like to overcome certain things is to gain more knowledge of the thing. So, for example, my partner, she was always knowledgeable about being queer and knowledgeable about homosexuality and the root of it and knowing that, you know, they existed from the beginning, whereas I didn't know. I'd never seen a gay Nigerian. I'd never had a clue about anything homosexual, so I hadn't a clue. And so I was then, you know, like kind of, I kind of like felt, you know, really oppressed by, you know, situations I'd be in, where people can see that I'm visibly queer. So I felt actually attacked for being homosexual. But my partner, because she'd been walking in it from the beginning and knows so much knowledge about homosexuality, she's like, oh, yes, my girlfriend. And I'm like, you know, aww. I'm like shaking there. And then so, but with regards to my blackness, regards to my Africanness, I tend to know more about my Africanness, about my blackness, about the root of us, about the glory of us. Mm. And so in that essence, I'm here entering everywhere as a Nigerian Igbo woman. Mm. And then she's like, oh, it's okay. It's all right. You know, entering... she's entering white spaces and going in it. She's there entering white spaces going, it's not always, you know, calm down, like they're white, and I'm going, so I'm going, so what, you know, do you know I'm Igbo, do you know? And so I feel like, you know, we all have all of those things that you mentioned have basically put me sometimes in a position where it has hindered my self-acceptance journey. But I've realized that knowledge is the thing that frees me. So I'm here learning so much about homosexuality now, knowing so much about homosexual leaders from AD and BC and all of that, you know, and whatever I can find to inform my self-acceptance. Because as I find the hindrance within myself, I try and find the knowledge that helps me go past it. Because you will find that wherever there's like oppression or hindrance to something, there's uneducation attached to it. And if you just know the roots, because loads of black people, for example, don't know why white people don't like them or racist people don't like them. They don't know why. Most of homosexual people don't know why heterosexual people are homophobic. They don't know why. And I'm saying, like, we need to ask ourselves why. We need to go to the roots. We need to find out, why is it? Why is this person find me distasteful without knowing me? What is it? And you will find that sometimes, you know, superiority is a guise for inferiority.
You deserve all of your flowers, and they're coming.
Thank you.
They are coming.
Thank you.
So I guess my last question is, and again, this may change from day to day, but what would you say is your affirmation for today? Or this month, or this moon cycle, or this season? What's kind of been a guiding affirmation that you needed to hear?
It's okay. You're doing all right. I realized that I had to mother myself of recent. And so, you know, every day, even when it comes to like showering sometimes or brushing my teeth, I have to tell myself, it's okay, you're doing really well.
Yes.
You're doing all right, you know. I learned to meditate, and I learned to silence the voices in my head. For a long time, I didn't put something in the place of that silence. So my silence came, which was great, because before it was so busy in my mind. My silence came, but nothing was put in its place. And so of recent, what I've been trying to do is put something in its place, which is like telling myself it's okay, saying it's all right, you're doing really well. You know, things that feels like mothering, things that feel like encouragement, because I didn't have that language. I didn't have words for myself that sounded like, it's okay, it's all right, you're doing really well. I didn't have that. And it's been helping me so far. I don't know how far it's going to go, but so far, within the last month or 2 months or so, it's been helping me, you know, it's been helping me do things that I'm finding really difficult to do.
A lot of us kind of forget that we have inner children inside of us that need love. You know, our parents do so much for us. Some of us that are lucky to have our parents around, some of us that have been raised by caregivers, you know, people are human. And when we're children, you look up to these adults like they're going to be able to fix all your problems. They're kind of the alpha and the omega and practically immortal. And then as you start growing up, you start to learn actually they are just humans. Mm-hmm. They make mistakes. They also have their own healing journey.
Yeah.
Some of our elders weren't lucky enough to have the vernacular, the tools, the discourse, the space to talk about their healing and actually look around to gather tools, you know. Some of our elders still don't even realize they still need healing, you know, and haven't acknowledged that. And so in that, a lot of us, especially within our community, are being raised with not having all of our emotional needs met. And so as we get older, we need to learn how to pour back into ourselves and nurture that inner child.
And, you know, I treat everyone I love like they're kids. You know, because at the end of the day, like, it's like me and my partner, we treat each other like we're kids. Because really and truly, what is adulting? Let's be real. Let's be real. It's a fraudulent system. That's what it is. What is adulting? You know, I feel like, you know, we'd be kinder to each other if we treated each other like we're still kids, you know. Mm. Have you met an adult that knows what they're doing? Have you met one? I have not met one. I have not met an adult that knows what mm-hmm, they're doing. Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. I treat everyone like they're kids, you mm-hmm. know? And I feel like that's why I seem to connect with people, because it's like, I don't care about your job. I don't care about what it is that you've... I don't care what you've done. You're literally a kid. Are you my friend? Are we friends? Oh. Do you want to go play? You know? And I feel like artists do that to the world. They remind everyone that they're kids.
Yeah, it's time to play.
You know, it's time to play. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Dilemma.
Thank you.
Thank you for being our first guest on our podcast. And this was a beautiful conversation. Everyone, this is Dilemma. If you want to learn more about her work, you can follow her on Instagram. It's at Dilemma, D-Y-L-E-M-A _. Please follow her work, follow her band, Dilemma Collective, and look out for more incredible work that she's going to be producing in this abundant 2020. Creation is everything you do. Make something. So, for this opening episode, our affirmation was a gentle reminder from the incredible Entozaki Shange. And today I'd like to honour her. Entozaki renamed herself using the Zulu Hausa dialect. And Entozaki actually means she who comes into her own things. And Shange meaning she who walks like a lion. She was a world-conscious woman who was award-winning legendary writer, artist, playwright, poet, dancer, educator, feminist, activist, mother, and gift. Born, like myself, on the 18th of October in 1948, she dedicated her entire career weaving the trauma, pain, hope, and magical experiences of Black women through poetry, movement, music, and performance. She wrote over 14 plays, published over 30 books for Black women and children, creating a necessary platform for us to talk about our process and share rituals for intergenerational transcendent healing. She's so fearless in her work and sharing stories of subjects that we're too often afraid to discuss, such as sexual assault, domestic violence, mental illness, racism. She's generous in her work and is really open about her battle with mental illness and multiple suicide attempts, which she's talked about. She used her anger and despair and channeled this into creating a voice for Black women who are navigating society's oppression. Her work transcends language, generations, and ensures that all of us are seen and heard. She's famously known for her book For the Coloured Girls, Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Was Enough, which is a choreo poem, performed worldwide, sharing the stories of 7 Black women who are united and empowered through their journeys. I chose today's gentle reminder, which is a snippet from her book called Safras, Cypress and Indigo, because right now is the time for us to create something. Right now is the beginning of the year. This is 2020, a year of an abundance. But in order for us to reach or be on the journey of self-actualizing and fully walking in our truth and power, we need to ensure that we move. You can spend so much time planning and hiding and creating things in the dark, but this year is about being able to shine. And I felt like for me right now, creativity isn't everything that I do. I don't always claim that. And so I wanted to claim that and honor it by making sure I do something about it. Entozaki Shange, we lost her in October 2018 at the dear age of 70. But what she teaches us is the importance of community, self-love and acceptance. We've been so blessed to have her art to continue to aid us in our healing. Please read all of her work. I'm yet to do that and I will spend the rest of my journey doing so, especially Wild Beauty and For the Coloured Girls. She asks us to do something radically different than what's happening in our current moment. To use our bodies, stories, and experiences to unite and liberate ourselves in our healing. If that isn't about radical self-acceptance, I don't know what is. For this, ONT loves, we honour you, Entozaki Shange. Well, I think that's it for this month's episode. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for taking time in your day, wherever you are, to listen, to share in our process. I feel like we've been moving in spirit, and with the dawn of the new decade, I think we have so much work to do, so much energy to pour into ourselves, into our work, into our home, into our loves, into our community. And at the heart of this is the birthing process of creating new things. Sometimes we forget that at the root of being and healing is creativity. Without the work or expression, we leave it stagnant. Let this episode be a reminder to move, create, and to be alive. going to end this episode with another quote from Mother Shange, we'll call her. Through my tears, I found God in myself, and I loved her fiercely. That's an excerpt from She Found God in Herself, She Found We from For the Coloured Girls. Until next time, loves, take care.